Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion on politics, human rights, and the environment. I'm Dori Smith. Our guest this time is Jennifer Allen. She's the executive director of the Border Action Network in Tucson, Arizona. According to Border Action, the continued buildup of border enforcement along the U.S.-Mexico border has created an atmosphere of fear and intimidation, eroded human and civil rights in border and migrant communities, and now threatens the safety and security of people living in towns and cities that have been described as low-intensity war zones. Jennifer Allen and her Border Action Network trains people in human rights work and organizes community forums in Arizona with Border Patrol and local police departments as part of a border-wide campaign to ensure the safety and rights of immigrants. We take a look at hidden agendas on the part of members of the private prison industry, where decisions to further criminalize illegal immigrants is concerned. And we take a look at the tactics of Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio of Arizona. Arpaio has been a frequent guest on national TV news programs like Lou Dobbs' show on CNN, announcing his new policy of arresting immigrants on conspiracy charges, using a bill set up to arrest those who would smuggle immigrants across the border. There has been little discussion of the fact that the bill Arpaio is using was not intended to be used in that way. That's according to the people who wrote it. Or of the fact that Arpaio's previous reinterpretations of the law have included the setting up of a live video feed from his booking room on the internet, the use of the taser and restraint chair as punishment, the placement of immigrants in a tent city prison where they suffer from high temperatures in the Arizona desert, and the restriction of the diet of prisoners so as to feed them on what he claims is less than what it takes to feed a dog. Arpaio's department has been successfully sued for wrongful death of inmates in cases featured on a BBC Channel 4 special on torture in U.S. prisons produced by Deborah Davies. I asked Jennifer Allen of the Border Action Network to talk about some of the media shortfalls that she is encountering in her work to try to have other voices from the border included.
One of the things that we see too often in media coverage of both immigrant communities and border communities is the fixation on personal interest stories. We've actually had focus groups or just groups of some of our youth members or some of the women in our organization have sat down with reporters from national publications that have tremendous impact. And instead of coverage highlighting their discussions around why it is that they are politically engaged in their communities, why it is that they have dedicated themselves to working for comprehensive immigration reform, working towards building a human rights movement in this country, instead the reporting tends to focus on their personal stories, which depoliticizes our communities, which further disempowers, takes away the power of our communities to be able to impact social change and to impact policies. It's a horrible pattern that works to just maintain the status quo and to keep our communities out of engaging in processes that we have to insist and break that space so that we can be a part of them.
Just talk about the matter of security and how you interpret the meaning of the word security.
I think security has been kind of misconstrued and manipulated. We have been working to try to put forward the notion of border security means community security in terms of communities that live on the border. That's much contrary to where the direction of current policies, and it's very contrary to the current debate, where border enforcement and border security is synonymous with militarization. I think it's very clearly reflected in President Bush's announcement of sending National Guard troops to the border, insisting in local law enforcement along the border to enforce immigration laws, relying on increasing numbers of Border Patrol agents. There's already about 12,000 placed along the U.S.-Mexico border, combined with the heavy technological presence. We have 30-foot-high camera towers. We have underground surveillance devices, such that if we're walking through neighborhoods, you have cameras watching you. And these camera towers are connected to rooms that are full of monitors. And these are all inside neighborhoods that live along the border. Something important to point out is that while the debate around the border is emphasizing that this is an uninhabited, porous region, in fact, there's 6 million people that live on the U.S. side of the U.S.-Mexico border. These are neighborhoods that are abut the border wall, which for about 75, 80 miles of which is all walled off with a solid metal 15-foot-high wall that literally divides communities that are absolutely intertwined with one another. And I think that that's the other piece within our communities is that for us, security must also reflect the absolute interconnection and interdependence of the border region. We can't have border security that just says that it's just Nogales, Arizona, put down a wall, and then whatever's on the other side, we have to completely ignore. Border mayors, border chambers of commerce, border law enforcement, fire departments, and police themselves have all articulated the need for having the interdependence between the border towns. After September 11th, and even recently on May 1st, when there was a boycott on the Agua Prieta Sonora side of Douglas, Arizona, border town, Douglas, which is much like any other border community, essentially shuts down if people cannot get across the border from the Mexican side. Businesses on May 1st lost about an 80% of their profits that day because they are completely dependent on shoppers that are a stone's throw away.
I want to talk a little bit about the issue of laws that are being interpreted now by, in some cases, people who are not official representatives of the law, such as the Minutemen and these other organizations at the border. There is Sheriff Arpaio's posse. I don't know if he's in the regions where your group operates, but there is this sense that his way of thinking, that he can reinterpret laws having to do with the prosecution of those who would smuggle in human beings across the Mexican-U.S. border. Just talk about this whole aspect of the reinterpretation of the law and then the carrying out of law enforcement by people who are not actually in law enforcement.
We have had in Arizona armed vigilante groups, civilians who have taken it upon themselves to organize themselves almost synonymously as a militia to enforce immigration law. That's been going on for decades, but they've become a lot more prominent. The groups have really proliferated. They've risen to a national scale just within the last 5 years. One of the things that we have seen over and over again is that our local officials, from the county attorneys down on the border, refuse to prosecute these groups. Even though we have about 1,000 people who have been involved in unlawful detentions, who have been involved in incidents where people were shot at, people were yelled, people were kicked, people were dragged by the hair out of bushes by these vigilantes, thrown on the front of ATVs and then driven through the desert where they then subsequently get, you know, all cut up with cactus thorns and other scrub. And all of our pressures from local communities, they have sent thousands of letters and postcards and petitions and held prayer vigils outside of the state attorney general's personal home, calling for him to prosecute these groups because they're making border communities unsafe. They're making the Mexican-American citizens that live in these towns, who are also mistaken by vigilante groups and mistreated by vigilante groups, feel unsafe. In addition to the undocumented women, men, and children who are risking their lives coming across the Arizona desert also being threatened. And all of this has essentially been to no avail. We have 3 civil lawsuits pending against vigilante activities. And in the last year, we submitted a human rights petition to the Organization of American States, Inter-American Commission on Human Rights, against the U.S. government for failing to prosecute these groups, in spite of the very clear and overwhelming evidence of them violating state and federal law. That has created this climate of absolute impunity, where people like Sheriff Arpaio, who has a political agenda, where people like Maricopa County attorney also have their own agenda in which they are linked up in part of this larger anti-immigrant movement, and they can then make selective, subjective interpretations and twists and bends of law for the selective prosecution of immigrants. Sheriff Arpaio has formed these posses, which are essentially, it's a county-operated militia that is going out and looking for undocumented immigrants and then using laws that he has manipulated and take out of context. It's an absurd situation combined with an absurd political moment in time where we have state officials who are unwilling to uphold the law that they should have upheld and should have set their foot down years ago to stymie this climate of impunity. Our governor, the Democratic Governor Janet Napolitano, actually came out 5 months ago calling for National Guard troops to be placed on the border, as well for stiff employer sanctions. The first group to step out and endorse her border plan was the Minutemen. So we have officials right now who are trying to push themselves farther and farther and farther to the right, chasing after anti-immigrant rhetoric to ensure that they get reelected. So what gets sacrificed is actually the rule of law, ironically. And what gets sacrificed is the basic civil rights and human rights, the people that live along the border, of immigrants that are coming to this country, of our family members who are both coming across this country and are trying to go to work, trying to go to school. All of that is being sacrificed in the name of this political game. And it's grown to tremendous, horrific proportions in Arizona.
I want to ask you about the new idea of incarcerating immigrants as they come across the border rather than turning them over to INS, which is what Sheriff Arpaio is doing, really, and he's already arrested hundreds, according to an interview that he gave to Lou Dobbs on CNN. Now, apparently, Terry Stewart had wanted to create some prisons that were specifically for immigrants. Is that correct?
Correct. There have actually been a number of different proposals from the Arizona Department of Corrections, as well as from the Federal Bureau of Prisons, to segregate prison populations according to nationality and legal status. There was a federal proposal to construct up to 4 privately run, I should emphasize, prisons that would house just non-citizens. We defeated that proposal. Then shortly thereafter, the state launched a proposal to build segregated prisons, and it has actually been successful in doing that. They have gone through the state facilities and segregated out the populations, so that there is a Mexican national wing, there's an African American wing, there's a Native American wing, so that the prison population is effectively segregated. The other push now is from private prison companies that then look at the immigrant prison population as their niche market. There's a growing industry around not only immigrant incarceration, but it also links in with border enforcement. Here it's directly correlatable to the growing border militarization that we also then get hand-in-hand with that, a growing prison complex as well.
Sheriff Arpaio talked about his tough law and order, I'm the meanest sheriff in the world, you know. Talk about the way intimidation has worked in the sense of how it makes people feel and what kinds of things it provokes.
Well, along the U.S.-Mexico border, we have some of the most policed communities in the country. We have thousands of Border Patrol agents. We have DEA. We have Customs. We have all sorts of sorted joint military operations. We have Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, just a bombardment of federal law enforcement agencies combined with local law enforcement. The federal law enforcement wields the power of whether or not you can stay in this country, which means whether you stay with your family or whether you are uprooted and your family ties are destroyed and you get deported. So that power is tremendous. The impact that it's had on our communities is one of absolute political suppression, where people are afraid to speak up. People are afraid to be perceived as the one who is rocking the boat, which then means that rights violations, from whether it's racial profiling or whether it's law enforcement agents entering your home without your permission or absolutely contrary to your permission, even if you insist that they cannot enter your home, they will still barge right ahead. People being held at gunpoint, people being falsely accused of being smugglers and being threatened to be deported, being threatened to have their children taken away from them. A lot of these sorts of violations are very common practices in border communities. However, both from the fear stemming from having communities with such a heavy law enforcement presence, people are not speaking up, or afraid to speak up, and are afraid of repercussions. But the other piece is that people don't speak up and are afraid, largely because there isn't faith in any sort of internal accountability processes. There is not faith that there are actual checks and balances within these agencies. And this becomes sort of the crux of our struggle when we talk about community security as it relates to border security. We must have mechanisms of accountability within federal law enforcement agents. We say whether there's 5 Border Patrol agents or there's 50,000 Border Patrol agents, if we do not have mechanisms of oversight and accountability and transparent complaint processes, then we will never be safe. And there will still continue to be abuses that actually undermine the very same goals and everything that the Border Patrol and other federal law enforcement agencies on the border are working towards.
To what extent is this reinventing, reinterpreting the law, making it up as you go along in order to enact these get tough kind of Wild West policies? To what extent is this being carried forward across the board, or do other sheriffs disagree with these tactics?
In Arizona, in fact, I just saw on CNN the other night, kind of late, sort of a juxtaposition between two Arizona sheriffs. One was the sheriff from Yuma County, which is right on the border, on the western corner of the state, bordered up with California. And then the other was Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who is from the Phoenix area. Phoenix is about 4 hours north of the border. The border sheriffs have actually been very clear, and this was reiterated, emphasized very well by the Yuma County Sheriff. They don't want to be blurring their lines with immigration enforcement. In fact, Yuma County has prosecuted, it's the only prosecution in the state of Arizona of two vigilante men who had found a group of 4 people, I think it was 2 women and 3 children, and they forced them all onto their knees. They handcuffed the people. They verbally abused them. And so they were actually prosecuted. What we find is that the closer to the issue, the closer to the border that our officials are, the more real the understanding is of the issues, the more that they actually recognize the interdependence of border communities. And the farther you get away from it, the less clear people are, and the more our communities become a political pawn, which is what we see very clearly with Sheriff Arpaio. If the sheriff and the local law enforcement in the areas where there's the greatest number of people coming across the border, other than ports of entry, who people are walking across the desert, and if these sheriffs are the ones that have much more sympathy, want to see that laws are upheld as laws were written and intended to be, that lines of jurisdiction between federal immigration officers and local law enforcement are maintained and are kept separate, that should have been telling to President Bush, in spite of him claiming that local law enforcement need to and that he's heard from them and that they need to be enforcing immigration, which is absolutely untrue, and it's contrary to statements made by the border mayors and border city councils and the sheriff's department, on and on. But the farther up we get, the more we see and feel other people making decisions for us that impact our daily lives and that take a tremendous toll on both our political participation, but also the very fundamental civil and human rights to which we're all entitled to.
You're talking about organizational work with, in many cases, people who either own land at the border or people who are U.S. citizens and renting and what have you. They are supposed to have the same kind of rights as anyone else in America. Talk about the way their rights are impacted now by this new policy from the White House, talking about this wall, talking about troops at the border and so on.
We're actually gearing up for a border-wide mobilization against militarization this coming Saturday, the 27th. It'll be happening not only just along the Arizona border, but also in Texas and California, and joined by people from New Mexico. One of the big issues in Arizona now is related to the Senate's passage of an amendment to build a triple wall that extends all the way from Calexico, California, to Douglas, Arizona. What that means is that our neighborhoods will have to be bulldozed. Again, this is not an uninhabited area. To build a triple wall means entire neighborhoods and businesses will have to be knocked down. That is not acceptable. Our homes should not be destroyed in the name of national security or in the name of border security. This is what's destabilizing our communities. The stabilization and the security of our communities is key and essential if we want to have secure borders. That's probably the most visceral reality that we're confronting right now. But the other issue related to the placing of National Guard troops on the border, we've already seen the errors of putting the military on the border. And unfortunately, we haven't learned from them. We just had a vigil commemorating the anniversary, or mourning, in fact, the loss of young 18-year-old Mexican-American boy, Ezequiel Hernandez, who was shot and killed by a Marines operation. The Marines were, much like what President Bush has been saying, were out on the Texas border, not patrolling. There are all sorts of promises that the military role then would be much more behind the scenes and providing support roles. I think the Marines were doing a training operation, also something that's being talked about today, that in fact National Guard troops will now be trained in Arizona and other border states. And that's kind of the justification for bringing them out here. The fact remains that military are not trained to be operating on domestic soil. They're not trained in constitutional rights. They're not trained that people are innocent until proven guilty, and that we have an entire judicial system that's set up to make those determinations. So what we saw in 1997 was the Marines identified this young Mexican-American boy who was outside herding his family's goats, and they determined that he fit the profile of a drug runner, and they shot and killed him. We do not want to repeat these same errors of history. I don't want my son or my brother, I don't want anybody's son or brother to be put at that sort of risk. We don't want any more Ezequiel Hernandez's on the border. That's why this Saturday on the 27th, communities are stepping up and showing their resistance to this extreme increases in border militarization that are coming out of the White House as well as the Congress.
And we've just had a news story where a man was shot. He was the driver of a car, which was assumed to be carrying illegal immigrants. We've not heard much more about this story. Can you just comment on what happened and the fact that they couldn't seem to find another way to stop this car other than to shoot the driver?
I'm not sure where that happened. However, I know that that's happened multiple times along the Arizona border. There's a lot of different issues related to extreme uses of force. And I think the issues reflect like using the wrong tool for the job. The fact, again, of putting National Guard along the border, when guard are trained to look at people as the enemy, but the people coming across the border are men, women, and children, and increasingly numbers of women and children coming across. Border Patrol agents and other federal law enforcement agencies on the border as well are driving around in Humvees. They have Kiowa helicopters, Apache helicopters. They're heavily armed and receive minimal training and have very high turnover rates, are not familiar with our communities, are not familiar with our culture here. So what happens too often is that our folks get shot, and the level of response that is used in situations involving workers that are coming here to work. You know, they will flee, and we wish that they didn't, but if it's a van loaded with people, they will flee from law enforcement. And then law enforcement response has been to throw down devices that will pop the tires, which means that the vehicle will roll. And, you know, a lot of the majority of the people in the vehicles are critically injured if they survive at all. People have been shot and killed by agents when they're driving vehicles if they don't stop. I mean, coming to look for work in this country should not be the equivalent of a death sentence. Whether we're talking about extreme uses of force by federal law enforcement agents, or if we're just talking more generally about a border enforcement strategy that has built up the urban areas and then subsequently pushed people into the more dangerous remote areas of the Arizona desert or the Texas area where people are dying coming across the river, it should not be a death sentence to look for work or to join up with your family. Why we clearly need real, meaningful immigration reform that provides a way for people that are already here, the 12 million undocumented families, to legalize their status, and a way for people to be here with rights, for people to come across legal ports of entry instead of walking through the desert, to be able to come here with workers' rights, with human rights, and to be able to live lives with dignity.
We might say that someone like Sheriff Arpaio is carrying out this policy of assuming the criminal angle and making arrests accordingly, and is establishing a pattern of acceptance in Arizona.
In many ways, regardless of what comes out of the Congress, these pieces to criminalize our communities, these pieces of heavy both border enforcement as well as interior enforcement, the pieces are already there. The dots are already being connected. It's one of the things that we see happening across the country, but you know, where we work mostly locally, is that with the mobilizations on April 10th, our communities really came out strong with millions and millions of immigrant families taking to the streets and insisting on their rights being respected and their rights being upheld and to lead lives with dignity. Much of this is in response not only to what's just happening right now within the Congress, but the current conditions. Because as we, you know, if we look at the legislation that's being talked about and the various amendments, in many ways, this is already happening. The interior enforcement, the recent raids that happened across the country, these are all things that have already been put into practice both in policy and legislation. It's just that interior enforcement has been largely ignored and not really implemented. But it's all there and ready to go, and we've been seeing increasing numbers of raids and checkpoints in the region.
Let me ask you, what kinds of things, what kinds of recommendations your organization has been making? I know the American Friends Service Committee is one of your supportive organizations that has mentioned you on their website. Tell listeners, first, how they can find you. Second, what kinds of things you're working on. And finally, what they can do, too, if they want to support you.
So people can reach us through our webpage, which is www.borderaction.org, or you can call us, 520-623-4944. And we have postcard campaigns, a lot of information up about how people can engage in some of the policy debates, how people across the country can also participate in National Days of Action that we're calling for, to denounce the growing militarization of the border.
Jennifer Allen is the executive director, the Border Action Network. Their website is borderaction.org. Their offices are in Tucson, Nogales, and Douglas, Arizona. They produce a newsletter, and you can find that online at borderaction.org. Jennifer Allen, let me ask you to speak to our listeners in Spanish now to tell listeners how they can get a hold of you and what this issue boils down to in terms of what your group is doing.
Creo que, como todos conocemos, esa lucha es una lucha para todos, que trabajamos por los derechos de los migrantes, pero también estamos trabajando para cambios sociales, para mejorar nuestras comunidades y cambiar las condiciones en que vivimos todos. Eso es una lucha para los derechos humanos de todos. Entonces, esperamos que todos puedan visitar nuestra página en el Internet, es el borderaction.org, o llamar nuestra oficina, que está en Arizona, es 520-623-4944. Es 520-623-4944. Nombre de la organización es la Red de Acción Fronteriza y tenemos base en Arizona, en Tucson, Nogales y Douglas, y esperamos que crecemos a toda parte del estado, pero que formamos conexiones con otras comunidades a lo largo de este país.
Jennifer Allen, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. Talk Nation Radio is produced in the studios of WHUS, Radio for the People at the University of Connecticut. WHUS.org and TalkNation.org or TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts and discussion.